Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Welcome to our episode on La La Land. Just kidding. This is Moonlight. As I was saying, I rewatched that yesterday as I was doing these notes. It is mortifying. And I remember watching it live, and I haven't seen it since. What year did this movie come out?
2016.
You're right. So this must have been, this was 2017.
Yeah.
Wow. And we all saw it live, but I went back and rewatched it, and it's so sad because the La La Land people like really think they won, and they're all giving speeches and like...
It's so satisfying though, because I hate La La Land. And I remember that this Oscar
absolutely, I mean, it's great that this won Best Picture.
Yeah, like, this was the best pick that year.
Yeah. So it's like... I don't know. It's a crazy moment. And then they just swipe the envelope out of Warren Beatty's hand. And it's so sad. And he comes up and he's like, I want to tell you what happened.
Yeah. Well, it was Faye Dunaway's fault. And then she left the stage. She's the one that announced it.
She ran. Yeah.
And then Warren Beatty's left to clean up.
And he's like, that's why I took so long. That's why I was looking at Faye like that. Because it was the wrong envelope.
I wonder if younger listeners know this moment in Oscar history when the wrong winner was chosen.
It's honestly iconic, but it's so funny because we were watching the Oscars and it was just such a sloppy, like there was a lot of mishaps.
This year.
There were a lot of mishaps. Yeah. Obviously nothing like this. But then I went back and watched this and I was like, that's crazy.
Well, and then the Will Smith slap happened just a couple years after this.
Yes. My God.
We were eating well.
This is entertaining. I know. Anyway.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to Seen and Heard. This is the podcast all about the sight and sound greatest films of all time list. I'm Greg.
I'm Jackie.
And we are at number
60.
60 on the 2022 sight and sound list. This is Barry Jenkins' Moonlight from 2016. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Before we get into Moonlight, is there anything else you've seen in the last week?
I watched just last night the Joachim Trier film Reprise, which is part of the Oslo trilogy, which it's great. What can I say? I just really love his movies. And it's so funny because you can very clearly see the line from like that to Worst Person in the World to even Sentimental Value. Like it's all hit. I just love that. Like when I watch one of his movies, it really feels like one of his movies, like every single time. So yeah, it's a great watch. It's on the Criterion Channel right now.
No, oh, check it out.
That's it. I just have one movie.
Well, if you're going to do one, make it a good one. That's great. I saw a couple. I've been watching sometimes on a sleepy Sunday. I will put on the R Gang shorts, like the Little Rascals from the 30s.
And, yes.
Those are fun. I like those.
Are they? I've never seen them.
Oh, yeah. They're great. Yeah, they're great. I really like them. And then it's like that sweet spot. They're theatrical shorts. So they're all like 20 minutes long or something like that. Because they were meant to run on a double bill, like in between two features or something like that, you know. And I just miss that whole era. And I know living in LA, some of our repertory theaters replicate that experience of like pre-shows or cartoons, but I really miss it. Like when every second of the movie going experience was not meant to maximize advertising possibility, where it's like when you walk into a multiplex now and it's like just previews for 30 minutes. Like the showtime starts at 6:30. That's when the previews start. The movie doesn't actually start till 7. And it's just... You feel exhausted. If you actually sit and watch all 30 minutes of those previews, you are run through the ringer at the end. And you're like, I don't even want to see the movie anymore.
Yeah.
So I just miss a time when it was generous. You pay your money to see a movie. You get a newsreel. You get a cartoon. You get a short. You get two movies. It was a great way to spend a day.
And anyway, it was like 10 cents.
I'm on my soapbox now.
Yeah, because you were around during that time.
Right? I was, yeah.
When movies were 10 cents.
Yeah, I had stones in my pockets that I would, you know, throw. And anyway. Yeah, so, okay, big one this week. I guess I hadn't seen this. I kind of thought I saw this in high school, but watching it this time, I was like, I don't think I've seen this before. Peeping Tom.
Yeah, I thought you'd seen that too.
Michael Powell.
I swear you've talked about that.
And it ties into last week's movie because Maura Shearer is in it. And so is the guy with like one of his eyes is dead or missing or something.
Who's
in the red shoes.
There's a guy with a lazy eye in the red shoes.
Yeah. I want to say he's just part of the company of the ballet company.
Is?
Yeah.
But he's a production designer?
Maybe. I forget. He just did it too. But anyway, he's also in Peeping Tom. No, not bald. But yeah, so have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
It's incredible.
Where'd you watch it?
I had the Criterion, because it's like anytime they release any Powell or Pressburger, it's just like, boop, done. I don't care what the movie is. Like, it's going to my collection. And so I just had it sitting on my shelf. And I thought I'd seen it before, because I remember my friends watching it. Maybe I saw part of it. Anyway, it's great. It's fantastic. Yeah. Same year as Psycho, 1960. It ruined Michael Powell's career. Because, I mean, it's very tame by today's standards, but like, yeah, at that time it was very, especially in the UK, which is where it's from, it was very scandalous.
Can't imagine.
And then I also watched Winchester 73, which is an Anthony Mann Western with Jimmy Stewart and Shelley Winters, which was great.
It was good?
Yeah, it's about like, he wins a Winchester rifle at a shooting contest, and then it's about like the rifle gets passed on from person to person. And Rock Hudson plays a Native American.
Oh, great.
And Tony Curtis is in it, but he's credited as Anthony Curtis.
Ooh.
He has like three lines. Oh. Anyway, it was a good movie.
So
I think you'd like it.
Ozar Balthazar, but with a gun.
It's not quite that, because the Jimmy Stewart character stays in the story the whole time. It's not quite like a clean, like it truly gets passed from person to person, but it does. Like it changes hands and it shows how the gun affects like each person that has it.
That sounds really cool. I always thought that was just like a, I don't know, another.
No, it's great.
Western.
No, it's good. It's really good. Recommend it. I think you'd like it.
Cool.
But anyway, that's me.
What's it called? Winchester
73.
Winchester Mystery House?
I wish. Having grown up near the Winchester Mystery House, I was so excited when they announced that movie where Helen Mirren was playing Sarah Winchester.
Yeah.
But I heard terrible things about it, so I never saw it.
Well, this is already in my watch list, actually.
Winchester?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I think you'd like it.
All of my friends have given it very high stars. Cool.
Worth a watch. Anyway, should we just get into this week's film?
Yes.
From 2016, this is Barry Jenkins' Moonlight.
Moonlight was released in 2016. It was written and directed by Barry Jenkins, with a story by Terrell Alvin McCraney, based on his unpublished play, In Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue. Cinematography by James Laxton, and music by Nicholas Britell. The film is structured as a triptych, with each act representing a different stage in the life of Chiron, a young black man growing up in Florida's Temple City. The film starts with Chiron as a boy nicknamed Little. Shy, guarded, and often bullied, Little meets drug dealer Juan while hiding out in a crack house. Juan is sympathetic and fatherly towards Chiron, and he and his girlfriend Teresa become surrogate parents to him, while his mother Paula struggles with crack addiction. Juan teaches Little how to swim in the ocean. His only friend at school is Kevin, a boy who urges Little to show the bullies he isn't soft. One night, Juan discovers Paula smoking with one of his customers, and he berates her. Paula bites back, criticizing Juan for acting like a guardian to Chiron when he's the one selling her the crack in the first place. Chiron runs away to Juan and Teresa's and asks them what a faggot is. Juan is supportive and tells him there's nothing wrong with being gay. Chiron then questions him about drugs, and when Juan admits he sells them, Chiron runs off, leaving Juan crying in shame. Part 2 finds Chiron as a high schooler, still withdrawn and bullied, with his mom's crack addiction reaching new lows as she starts prostituting herself. Juan has died, but Chiron still escapes to Teresa's whenever he needs to. Kevin is still his friend and has nicknamed him Black. One night on the beach after sharing a blunt, Chiron and Kevin share a kiss and Kevin gives Chiron a handjob. The next day, a bully named Terrell pressures Kevin into punching Chiron down until they all join in, beating him. Chiron refuses to press charges, but the next day at school slams a chair into Terrell's head. Chiron's arrested. In part 3, Chiron, now going by Black, is a tough, successful drug dealer on the streets of Atlanta. His mother is in a rehab center and often calls him to come visit her. Out of the blue, he gets a call from Kevin, who apologizes for what happened and tells him to come visit him at the restaurant he works at if he's ever in Miami. Chiron visits Paula, who apologizes to him for his childhood, begging him to believe she loves him, and the two reconcile. Chiron drives to Miami to see Kevin, who is surprised to see how he turned out. They talk, Kevin makes Chiron a meal, and they go back to Kevin's apartment. There, Kevin admits his life is not what he expected, but he's happy. Chiron admits to Kevin that he's the only man who ever touched him, and he hasn't touched anyone since. Kevin cradles Chiron as he remembers being on the beach as a child. The film stars Mahershala Ali as Juan, Naomi Harris as Paula, Trevante Rhodes as Black, Alex R. Hibbert as Little, Janelle Monáe as Teresa, Andre Holland as adult Kevin, and Ashton Sanders as Chiron. The film was Barry Jenkins' second feature, his first one being Medicine for Melancholy in 2008. In 2013, his producer, Adele Romansky, and him were urgently trying to get his second feature off the ground, and they wanted to make something that was super low budget. He came across McCraney's play through the Borscht Arts Collective, which is an arts foundation dedicated to short films and videos in and about Miami. McCraney wrote the semi-autobiographical play after his mother died of AIDS, but it sat unproduced for 10 years until Moonlight came along. Jenkins identified with McCraney's piece. He's also from Temple City, and his mother also suffered from drug addiction. In the play, the three stories play out simultaneously, and it isn't until the midpoint when you realize all three characters are the same person. Jenkins secured financing after sharing the script with Brad Pitt's executives at Plan B at the Telluride Film Festival, and this became the first production for A24, who distributed it worldwide. Andre Holland had previously acted in McCraney's plays. Naomi Harris was hesitant to play Paula, but Jenkins convinced her after telling her she was a representation of both his and McCraney's mothers. It was a 25-day shoot, shot in many areas where Jenkins and McCraney grew up. It was ultra low budget, $1.5 million. I mean, ultra low budget for a Best Picture winner. The three actors playing Chiron only met after shooting. James Laxton, the cinematographer, met Barry Jenkins while they were in film school. He also met his two editors, Joy McMillan and Nat Sanders, at film school. Sanders edited the first and second chapters, while McMillan edited the third act. But they all worked in the same room. The biggest change the editors made was that they moved the scene where Chiron visits his mother. That was meant to be the first scene in the third act, but they moved it to where it is, which I think is crucial. Like, the place it is now is crucial to me. So it's super interesting. And Joy McMillan became the first Black woman to be nominated for an editing Oscar and remains the only one who's been nominated. This was a huge festival darling. Telluride, Toronto, New York, BFI, Vancouver. It was nominated for 8 Oscars. It won Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Adapted Screenplay. Of course, the famous mix-up that we talked about with Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty, accidentally reading La La Land as the winner, has now become kind of, I don't know, iconic.
Yeah, like, yeah.
What can I say? And as I said, this is one of the lowest budget Best Picture winners. It cost less than a 30-second Oscar ad slot that year. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
It's incredible. I didn't know the budget was
that low.
No,
I didn't know that either.
That's a testament to the filmmaking, is you really can't tell that it's that low.
Yeah.
It was also voted the best film of the decade out of 100 by IndieWire critics in 2020. So from 2010 to 2020, this was voted number one best film.
Wow.
Yeah.
The laurels.
I know. crazy, Laurels. What a darling.
Well, before we get into initial thoughts, just this quick word from our sponsors.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Initial thoughts.
Yeah, so I saw this when it came out and I liked it. I thought it was very good, very strong. It's hard to untangle this movie from the Oscars and that moment, but I was so like, I really did not like La La Land. And I know you think differently. I know.
I like La La Land. I like this much more than La La Land.
So many people I respect like La La Land. So I'm not trying to trash it. I just like, at that time, it really made me angry because we lived near the Vista Theater. And every time I'd pass the Vista, La La Land was still on the marquee. And this happened for like months. And every time I drive past, I'm like, it's still there. And I would like get madder and madder. So stupid. Anyway, this is way better than La La Land. So yeah, when it did win, when La La Land first won, I was like, no. And then they're like, no, just kidding, Moonlight. And then I like jumped up because I was so excited. Because in my mind, like this was the real movie between the two of them, which is a very pompous thing to say. But I like this movie. I think that... And you know, I will say, too, with the caveat that I haven't seen Barry Jenkins' first movie, Medicine for Melancholy, but I've seen what he's done since outside of, like, Mufasa. But I saw Beale Street, which I didn't really like, and I saw some of Underground Railroad, which I also didn't really like. And coming back to this, I do think this is the strongest of his work. I hate this with, like, new movies, right? Because... on this 2022 list, we are looking at a number of movies that were like pretty recent when they were added to this list. I don't know that it's top 100. I certainly get the push. And just like, because before this, the Sight and Sound list was just all white stories. Like really for so long, it was white stories, whether it was American movies, European movies, whatever. Some Asian influence on the list. But yeah, I mean, it's mostly European. And I get that. And I want to correct this wrong. But watching it this time, it's funny too that like, I saw this when it came out in 2016, really liked it, and then never really thought about it again. And I was like, I couldn't actually remember a lot from this movie. I realized that was 10 years ago.
It's crazy.
But sitting down to it last night, I was like, okay. And you know, I think it's a very handsome, strong movie. It's very handsomely made. It's very well acted. It's subtle-ish.
I think it's definitely subtle.
I do think Barry Jenkins sometimes feels a little like on the nose. But yeah, I think it's a beautiful movie that... you know, it's beautifully stated. I think for me, what really makes this movie work is the third act. I think that's what makes it interesting, because if we had just seen Chiron grow up into the character that he sort of is in the first two sections, it would have been a little bit like, okay. But the fact that he does this 180, he reinvents himself for the third act, and we don't even recognize him in that third act. Molly even pointed out, again, who's in casting, that it almost works that the actor who plays older Chiron doesn't look like...
it's such a choice that they, all three of them, look so different.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, the movie's about identity and,
yeah,
and changing yourself and adapting. And so I think that works.
Yeah. But I think it's beautiful. I think it's beautiful. I don't know that it's top 100 of all time, but... yeah. Anyway, that's me. How about you?
Well, we'll see where it stands, I guess. I guess the real test will be... the next list, right? It's so interesting, like these new movies on the list. I really am curious to see what's gonna
to see last which ones on stay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I hadn't seen this since it came out, I don't think, but I had the disc because I knew it was something I was gonna revisit. I think I got it like in some sort of sale somewhere. It's like I think I saw it somewhere and I was like, yeah, I'm going to rewatch that. So I sat down to watch this at 10 p.m. and I was in bed by 12:10. No pausing.
Wait, did you watch this last night?
No, the night before.
Oh, okay, because I also started at around 10 p.m.
10 p.m. and I was in bed by 12:10. That's how little I like paused it,
yeah.
Got up, checked my phone. I'm not tired. I wasn't antsy. I was like fully immersed. And I just loved it. Like I was, it ended and I was sobbing. Like I really was really, really affected. Maybe more than the first time I saw it. Because what, that was 10 years ago? How old was I?
12? I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Anyway, yeah, I think it's... what's funny is that like I also didn't remember a lot, but I remembered little things. Like his conversation with Juan about drugs. That's burned in my memory. And like, but I didn't remember Juan crying, which that just, oh my God. Like, I don't know. I was very choked up a lot during this movie. The chair smashing into the bully. I remember that too. What else? There was something else. The Barbara Lewis song. The Barbara Lewis song is also like burned into my memory. Mm-hmm. And the "You're the Only Man Who's Ever Touched Me." Like those things have always been on my mind. And then now going back, it was just great to see it again. Honestly, I love Barry Jenkins. I love Beale Street. Really. And when I saw Beale Street, I remember being like, oh, I like this more than Moonlight. Mm. So now I'd be interested to go back and rewatch.
What about Underground Railroad? Did you see that?
I didn't see it. Is it on Criterion?
It is, yeah.
And it's a mini series?
Yeah, I think it was made for Apple or something.
Okay. I just love the movie. I think it's got so much heart. I think it's romantic. I think it's sweeping, even though it's so small and so contained. $1.5 million, like that is insane.
Yeah.
But of course, any movie that takes you through the stages of life of someone does have this grandiose feel, I guess, even if it's something so small. And yeah, I mean, the emotions just flow out of me when I watched this. It was just, and it was effortless. It never felt forced. I thought the movie was very subtle. I don't know. And it was cinematic. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful film. Like, I get the hype.
Right.
I get it.
Right.
And I agree.
Do you think this movie has stayed in the conversation in the 10 years since it came out?
It's strange because it's at the top of a lot of, I think, is it like at the top of, I feel like I see the image of Juan holding him in the water a lot. Like that is what has persisted.
Mm-hmm.
That scene and that image, I feel like pops up in like clips and on shot deck and stuff. Like, I don't know. Maybe not as much as we thought it would. Mm-hmm. Definitely not as much as we thought it would.
Right.
But I'm hungry for more Barry Jenkins, I think. I'm hungry for... I mean, obviously, I didn't see Mufasa, but like...
Well, why obviously?
I mean, come on.
Yeah, I didn't like that first Lion King adaptation. I saw that shit.
I didn't see...
Just the whole Disney remaking their animated catalog, but as CG, it's like the worst trend in movie history outside of Marvel. Anyway, let's talk about Moonlight.
Let's talk about these three chapters. So they were shot, and maybe I should have mentioned this in the specs, but they were shot and colored in a way to emulate the three different film stocks. Did you know this?
No.
The first chapter is Fujifilm, which is like a little warmer and more textured skin tones. The third chapter is Kodak, which is less restrained and more pop to the image. The second one is Agfa film stock, which is a retired German film stock, which added this greenish blue hue, this cyan.
Mm.
Anyway, I've never heard of Agfa, but it was really interesting. And it's great because it's like, yeah, if you're going to shoot a movie for $1.5 million, you can't shoot it on film, but you can do stuff like this.
Right, yeah.
So that's why there's something about this movie that I think is very beautifully, meticulously crafted. I mean, a lot about it. I think the story and the cinematography. And there's a lot of like color theories here, like Moonlight and blue every time he's like most vulnerable.
You know what's interesting that you mentioned the Moonlight? my memory of this movie was that it was very ethereal and like kind of like, because I feel like Beale Street even more pushes this sort of dreamy aesthetic.
Close-ups, yeah.
And I remembered this movie being dreamier than it was. And I kept kind of, my memory of it served me wrong. Like I was watching it last night and I was like, when is it going to get dreamier? And it never quite did.
I think there are moments of it. And I think they're very pointed. Like, especially in the first half, there's a lot of montage-y moments, right? There's a lot of like quick cuts. There's a lot of him when he's playing soccer with the boys or the dance class. I love the dance class. And if you notice, the dance class is pink, which I noticed. And that's where he's most comfortable. That's where we see him like actually express himself for a moment. And Teresa and Juan's house is pink too inside.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Their walls are painted pink. And so it's like little things like that. And there's, of course, the saturated fluorescence. That's like when things are bad. And then there's like the warmth of the restaurant in the final scene. And that's very dreamy to me. That restaurant final scene. That's like Wong Kar Wai to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he loves Wong Kar Wai. Like he's talked about Wong Kar Wai.
Oh, you can see it. Yeah.
But the colors are great. But I think that it works because we're in Chiron's head through the camera work overall. Like that really worked to me. Like the moment like where we're transitioning into the second act and the first thing we see is just like this close up of this boy and his lips, and then it's Chiron. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's things like that where we really got in his head. The scene with Naomi Harris, that's so heartbreaking. Like when he comes home again in the second act and she asks him for money.
Yeah.
That scene is so tough because she's, first of all, Naomi Harris,
incredible
in this. Absolutely breathtaking. I wish, who won the Oscar that year?
I don't know.
She should have. But it's so sad because at first she's like, how's Teresa? Is she good? Like, I haven't seen her since the funeral. And then she turns on her and she's like, she's not your mom, and give me that money. But it's her money. And it's so hard to watch.
Yeah.
But the way that it's shot in those close-ups, like that's pretty dreamy to me. Not in a nice dream, but a ethereal way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A getting into Chiron's head way.
No. The movie has a great look to it.
What about the part also in the second act? I guess a lot of this happens in the second act when the bully is like kind of circling him right before he's about to get punched.
Uh-huh.
That part's incredible.
The movie kind of has that too in the opening scene where Mahershala Ali goes up and talks to the guy.
It's a long shot.
It is that like Brian De Palma Carey shot where it goes up to him and then just circles the two of them.
Yeah.
Almost like you think something bad is going to happen.
Yes. And of course in the second half it does. But I love it because Chiron's not there. You're just with the bully. And then it's like, oh wow, he's here. Like I didn't even realize he's here.
Yeah.
And it's great. And then there's the dream sequences. He has two dreams about Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is when he's a teenager and he sees Kevin having sex with that girl. And then the second one is just Kevin outside the diner smoking, which is gorgeous.
And both are like wet dreams, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so good. It works for me. And you know what else? It's not even just the camera. It's the sound design. Like his mom yelling at him with no sound. And then the way that we get into the third act is he wakes up from that dream and we actually hear what she's saying.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
The sound design in the restaurant where you can't really hear anything until he comes up to him. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Same when the social worker's talking to him in part two. Do you remember?
Yes.
It kind of goes blank and I don't know.
Yeah.
I love it. Or when he sees Kevin, when he's an adult and Kevin finally comes up to him and he says Chiron, but it's not synced sound.
Yeah, because isn't he's slowed down, right? The image is slowed down a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. That just sort of heightened.
And then when
stuff.
He hears impressionistic. The ocean, he hears the ocean in the cafe, in the diner.
Yeah.
He hears the ocean for one moment. So good.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was really just immersed in this and in him. And it just works for me. A lot of the technical aspects of it work for me. The story works for me. The themes.
No, to be clear, I think part of this too is like we have done from Spirited Away and Totoro to the red shoes and the apartment. And it's been like really masterpiece after masterpiece that like, it's like in the wake of all of these like near perfect movies, it's like somehow this just doesn't quite feel for me up. It doesn't quite feel up to par. Like, I think this is a very good movie. I just like, do you think it should be on the top 100?
I don't know. It's a little hard to tell. This is why it's like, it's hard with the new movies for me.
You know, I will say something that's weird, but you're right. When new movies, because
it's just hard.
We've spent so much time looking at the great movies of international cinema from the history until now. And I think there's so many great films in there that like when a newer movie goes in, it almost feels like an intruder or something. Like there's something about, and Moonlight's a very good movie, but like it just comes like, is this as good as like Killer of Sheep? Is this as good as The Foreigner Blows? You know, it's just like, no.
I think time will tell. I don't know. I think the movie's really important.
No, I think so too.
Or in terms of like American films, I think it's absolutely essential.
I still think there should be this is a stupid rule to have, but when the Sight and Sound list comes out, the movie should have to at least be 20 years old at that point or something to be considered.
It's like 15.
But just because.
I kind of agree.
Honestly, most of the movies on the 2022 list that were brand new, I don't think should be on. In fact, I don't know if a single one of them should be on.
Spirited Away.
Well, no, that was 20 years old at that point.
But it was the first time it was on the top 100.
Yeah, yeah. No, that one does deserve to be on. But like, there are plenty of movies that were like just a couple years old when the 2022 list came out that are on.
Yeah.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
But let's talk about like what the movie is saying about identity.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I think that using the three Chirons is the best example of this, of just three completely different people who mm-hmm. don't even look alike. And the hard cuts into the future is what I love. I love that we don't see anything in between those times. Like, it's just like,
it does that transition with a black screen and a couple like
flashes of light.
Oh,
I love it.
Yeah. No, it's nice.
And the way that he adopts, what do we think about the way that he kind of adopts Juan's identity in the third act?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a nice full circle moment because obviously Juan is he's the real parental figure. I mean, him and Janelle Monáe, but like, I think it's beautiful that still knowing the heartbreak of knowing that Juan was a drug dealer
exactly.
and was contributing to his mother's demise.
Yeah.
Still was this great person and was this like father figure and this protector and someone even too, because I'm assuming the first chapter takes place in the 80s or not, early
like
90s,
80s, I think.
And the fact 90s. That someone that's a drug dealer would be accepting of this kid who
yes.
might be gay, who straight up tells him, if you're gay, that's fine too. Like, I feel
yeah.
like that's rare, especially
says,
for a drug dealer.
Call you a faggot. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And want, yeah, I mean, like, he's just breaking stereotypes right off the bat. And him and Teresa's house is like, it's warm and it's caring and it's nurturing. But then when it hits you, like, that conversation he has with Paula, the mother, incredible, where he tells her, like, are you going to raise him? And she goes, are you going to sell me rocks? It's just, it's incredible. And then I feel like he adopts this persona for like several reasons, right? Chiron, now I'm talking about Chiron. And he's A, hiding that he's gay because like he's already vulnerable and his persona can't be, like he has to be as tough as possible. So like he has to do that. B, he's looking up to Juan because he's the only father he ever had. And C, like he went to prison at a young age for something he shouldn't have gone to prison for. And it's a heartbreaking situation. And that was his only option when he got out. And so I love that the movie just like each of those reasons is so deep and layered
yeah.
and explored to the T. Mm-hmm. And it's so emotional. And I think that's why this movie moved me so much. And the fact of the matter is that like, yeah, Juan is a drug dealer. But yet the way that the characters, even him, even Paula, I feel like the hardest judges are themselves. Yes, Chiron has a problem with his mom and probably does judge her, but I think that she is her harshest critic. Juan is his harshest critic. And it's so sad and it's so heartbreaking.
Yeah, I agree.
My God.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just impossible situations after impossible situation. And then the conversation about what a faggot is, and it's, I don't know. It really got me. And he's honest with him. He's so honest with him. And the camera just lingers. It's really good. And then Teresa's hand comes in frame and she holds his hand.
Yeah.
And then Paula and their reconciliation is something I didn't quite remember. And I was a mess.
That one tear coming down.
That scene, I was a freaking mess. Yeah. It's just so beautiful. If I think about it, I might start crying, but...
well, yeah, I mean, yeah, no, it's beautifully done, and just like the lifetime of regret kind of all surfacing at once. And, you know, yeah, she's in a rehab center, so the sense that she's has a clearer mind
she's
than
trying,
she's had
she's
in
like,
a long time.
I don't want to get out. Like,
yeah.
She says, this is home.
She's afraid of herself, what she'll do if she gets out and what she'll fall back into.
And even though Chiron is like putting on this tough guy persona, he still has the picture of his mom by his bed.
Yeah.
Him and his mom, even though he's not answering her calls. And he's got such a big heart and they're there. And she says, like, don't let your heart turn black like mine. Like your heart doesn't, like you can love.
Yeah.
And then he goes immediately to Kevin. So it's like... That scene has to be there in my mind.
Oh, yeah.
That scene has. Mm-hmm. So what a great choice by the editors, because that scene absolutely, to me, story-wise, has to be there.
Yeah.
And he just drives, by the way. Like, he doesn't even plan. That's a whim. He didn't even pack anything. He just drove.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Does Kevin tell him, come visit me?
He says, like, if you're ever in Miami,
okay, right.
Come by, I'll make you a meal.
Right.
But he has to drive from Atlanta.
Yeah, that's quite a drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. The life of a drug dealer where you can pick up and go.
Yes.
You don't have to call into work. You don't have to find a replacement. You're
just I guess. Hey. Let's talk about that.
No, it is beautiful.
Diner scene.
Yeah. I think anywhere, this is where the movie... The diner scene, I feel like they milk a little too much, if I'm being
really?
Completely honest.
I love it.
I love a lot about it. I don't know. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I love Andre Holland.
Hey, he's so good.
I know I've said this word before. It's like a cliche at this point. But it's in danger a few moments in the diner scene of veering into preciousness. Like, I think especially when Andre Holland comes back from the kitchen and he's holding the plate and he's just like standing there smiling in this like very knowing way.
No, I love
it. It's just a little too much. It's a little too much.
I love it.
But yeah, I mean, it looks great. I love how different from the rest of the movie that whole stretch feels. There is something about the diner that feels like a warm hug, even back to like, you know, the music that's on the jukebox. And that was obviously what triggered Kevin to call him.
No, and I love
song.
That moment. And he's like, why did you call me? And he's like, I told you. And he's like, yeah, you said like the jukebox. And he goes and he puts the song. Ugh.
Talk about Wong Kar Wai. Yeah,
it is so Wong Kar Wai. But I also love in the diner when he asks him what he's doing and he says he's dealing drugs. And Kevin is really disappointed and surprised. And he goes, you don't know me. And Kevin goes, I don't know you? That moment to me is like, oh.
Yeah. No, I love that.
It's really good. That's why it's like.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the acting. I think the directing here is like really top notch. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Sorry. Continue.
Yeah. He has a great way with actors. I think maybe in a couple of there's a couple deliveries in this movie that feel very affected, where it's like you can almost feel the actor giving this like performance. I think mostly it's really beautifully acted and like pretty subtle, but there are a couple moments that I don't even think are the actors. I almost think it's just like in the script wise, like just this moment of profundity that the actors are kind of like trying to process or something. And you can kind of see them being like, this is a profound moment in this script and kind of like holding it. If that makes any sense.
What?
I don't like that moment where he comes back from the kitchen with the plate. There's a couple moments like that in this movie. Mm. But No, I think it's the performances. Yeah, I mean, I think Barry Jenkins has a way with actors. And certainly the casting is in this movie is great. And so, like, you know, that's a lot of the heavy lifting right there. But everyone understands the tone. There is this almost like, this movie's not necessarily realistic. I think this movie goes for sort of a heightened,
dreamlike,
sort of hushed, you know, like that's the wave that this movie exists on.
Yeah. But it's strange because it kind of juggles the two, because when it starts, it's very almost documentary-y with Juan getting
out of the car. But looks too beautiful.
But looks beautiful, exactly, which I like about it. It's very European, in one word. Mm. It's very international, right?
In that sense?
Yeah. Just in the craftsmanship, in the actual, in the choices being made, in the camera choices and the color choices and the dream escapey moments.
I don't know, because the dream sequences are pretty clear and they're quick and they serve a very clear purpose of, like, he's fantasizing about Kevin, really, when it comes down to it. And the dreams are kind of matter of fact, and they're kind of like, you know, especially that first one where Kevin is like fucking that girl, very much just like, I don't know. I don't think the dreams are really given room to breathe. I almost could have used, even though I didn't love Beale Street, I almost could have used a little bit more of that energy in this. And just when it comes to stuff like, I would have loved to see Chiron's dreams a little more and maybe veering from dreams into reality, because Chiron is this character where you need to coax things out of him. He's not going to offer up his emotions. He is pretty closed off because of his upbringing. And often characters through the movie are trying to get him to come out of his shell, whether it's Janelle Monáe or Mahershala Ali or his mom even or Kevin. They're trying to pull him out. So it's about the people around him seeing the goodness in him and trying to, like, get them like, hey, man, open up. So I would have, because he is this kind of like insular character, I would have preferred more like dreamscapes and sort of stuff like that.
I could see that. What about the beach scene? Both beach
Which
scenes.
One? I mean, those are great. Yeah. And I love too, just the theme of water in this movie. And I feel like Barry Jenkins does a great job with like sensory stuff. And there's the whole baptism element of that, especially with him, you know, bathing him or cleaning him in the water. When he finds his like adopted family, essentially.
Yeah. I love too when he takes him to lunch and he's like, he's trying to get it out of him. Like, where do I take you? Like, I need to take you home. And he pulls the food away from him and he like hangs his head like this. And Juan starts laughing and he's like, I apologize. I'm sorry. That moment's so sweet.
Yeah. I kind of want more Juan. I know that's the whole point of the movie is that he has to go away at a certain point.
And Juan even tells him, like, no one can tell you what to be but you. But of course, is that true in the world that he lives in?
Well,
not really.
I think the thing that's interesting about it is Chiron is in his late 20s in the last chapter of this movie. You're still evolving. You're still growing. I think his drug dealer phase where he's like super jacked is just a phase. And I don't think that's really who he's like meant to be.
No, I don't think so
either. He's
more
sensitive than that.
Yeah, but I think that the whole movie is kind of like, well, look at Juan. I mean, he was also a drug dealer.
No, of course.
Super sensitive.
No, of course. So it's like, I'm not saying it's a fault of the movie. I'm saying, like, I think if there was a fourth chapter in this,
he would be completely different.
Yeah.
Right?
He would have a scarf. No. He would be reading, he'd have some thick books under his arm or something.
He'd be a professor.
Yeah.
I would almost love to see, like, a short film by Barry Jenkins that's, like, just the fourth chapter.
Oh. Just him a little coda.
Yeah.
Him and a what?
Him and Kevin. I was going to say Andre. Him and Kevin are together.
Yeah.
Oh, that ending. That ending.
I do love that. That ending is what we get. I think that is so the right call. I don't want to see them like, I just the holding, like holding him.
He's holding
That's beautiful.
Him and then he's on the beach. He's thinking about the beach. Him as a little boy on the beach. And it's very 400 blowsy. He's going back to that moment that he was with Juan and he was comfortable and he was safe.
Yeah, because he looks at the camera, right?
Oh, my
right,
God.
At the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, 400 blows for sure.
It's.
They just needed a freeze frame and Fiend.
It's so good. When the credit, it's so weird. Like the movie stopped and then like 30 seconds later, I started crying. It was so weird. It took like a second. It really affected me, especially the ending. And I love that line of "You're the only man who's ever touched me." It's, and he hasn't touched anyone since. And it's just, I don't know.
I really like the format a lot.
I love it too.
I've seen this in other movies before. And I'm not saying this movie approaches the depth of Moonlight, but the Brian Wilson movie, Love and Mercy, which came out a couple years before this, I really, really love, as a big Brian Wilson fan, but also like it, the way that it deals with, you know, someone's life as opposed to a traditional biopic is it takes two eras from his life that are 20 years apart, zooms into those two moments, and then cuts back and forth between them. So like Paul Dano plays the young version of Brian Wilson and John Cusack plays the middle-aged version, both going through these big moments in their life, these sort of crises. And I love that format because like I don't want to see this sweeping thing of his whole life. In that movie, because it's Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, the opening credits are the Beach Boys. And then the movie starts and it's like, okay, we've already done that. We're not going to show him getting big with the Beach Boys and stuff. But I just think that that's the way to do a movie like this. I think the Moonlight way of going in, taking a few points and just zooming in, because you can learn a lot about a person from these key moments in their life. And also I think the connective tissue doesn't always matter. And on top of that, it's fun to fill in the connective tissue yourself. So between parts 2 and 3 of Moonlight, it's fun for you to think about, oh, he moved to Atlanta, and like you can kind of imagine in your head
his
mom's in rehab, and you can kind of imagine how he got to this character that he is in the third part.
Or in between 1 and 2, where you get the sense that Juan is dead, but we never really learn why.
Mm-hmm. Well, you assume it is a drug dealer related death.
I mean, he was young, maybe. Yeah. And Janelle Monáe is still. I love Teresa. She's a good character.
Yeah.
I love her.
Well, I think too, because you don't quite know, like Mahershala Ali from the beginning seems like a great guy, almost too good to be true. It is a little sketchy where like a grown man is like, you know, goading a kid, like, come here, come to lunch with me. Like that could be creepy.
Well, he
could
have bad intentions.
No, absolutely. But then when he takes him home and you meet Janelle Monáe, you're like, okay, everything's like, he's a good guy. Like, look at his wife or girlfriend or whoever she is.
And
to
it's
him.
Just so interesting because like look at their house.
Yeah.
It's so nice.
Wait, he's a drug dealer.
But that's what I mean. It's like, it's breaking stereotypes in a way that we're maybe used to now, but like, if you think about 10 years ago, it wasn't like that. And I think the movie was very groundbreaking for that, of just breaking these stereotypes about black culture.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Like if for him, drug dealing was just a means to get to where he wanted. And it's because it's what was afforded to him. Right. Like, I'm sure
Juan
Chiron.
Well, the same thing kind of with Chiron.
That's true. It kind of repeats itself with Chiron, but it's like not given the tools to go to college, or like no one around them is going to college and family is not encouraging it. I mean, his mom's
a nurse, by the way. And Barry Jenkins' mom was a nurse, but she was addicted to crack.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but no, it's
no
great.
No father figure.
No, and it is great that like the drug dealing is just a means to get the life they want. It's not like they're getting caught up in the quote unquote romance of that lifestyle. It's like just as a means to like, you know, do well and you know.
But it's sad.
It's sad, yeah.
It's really, really
because
sad.
Because it feels like a dead end. And for Mahershala Ali, obviously it is.
Yeah. And it's because Kevin gets arrested and then he comes out and he's working at the restaurant and he's on parole and he's happy. He has that whole speech of like, this is not how I thought it was going to turn out.
He's a kid with a woman.
Yeah.
And his sense of purpose in
his
life. And
that part's really beautiful. And I guess it took him, although Chiron went to prison too, but he went to juvie.
Yeah.
But Kevin, when he got out, I guess he was like, oh, I can never go back to the streets. And so the movie just gives you so many different situations and people. And it's,
I love that line about Kevin where he's like, I'm exhausted at the end of every day, but like, I don't have any worries.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, that is great. I know Kevin's so cute at the end.
No, of course. He's cute throughout. No, yeah, he is.
He's really cute throughout.
Yeah. I laughed through the scene, the beach scene with the two of them, because Kevin is like, it's clear what his intentions are, but he still has that facade up of like being a bro and like, you know, having his guard is up and he's trying to test Chiron, like, are you into this? Are you going to be into this? And like, it's just funny. It's like, damn, I didn't know you smoked weed like that.
I know. Yeah. And they are high. So I guess that helps.
Yeah.
Each of them loosen up.
I think the one thing I really like too about this movie is that there's no shame in, especially that first scene where they're on the beach together. Chiron could have felt shame about that, right? Of like, I did this thing that I shouldn't have done, right? You know, especially growing up in a culture where it is like, you know, frowned upon to be gay, which is why Kevin has to overcompensate by like beating people up that this guy tells him to. But that there's no shame following it. Like, they have this really beautiful exchange afterwards where like, oh, I'll see you soon. And like, they're smiling at each other.
And I love the moment when Kevin wipes his hand in the sand and then they shake hands when they're leaving. And it's like, you're kind of like,
Yeah, I love that.
It is great.
Yeah.
It's romantic. It is. Sad.
Yeah. And then the thought of Chiron, like,
never being with anyone since.
But he doesn't say it outright. He was like, it's something like, I've basically haven't been with anyone since.
I mean, he's probably like made out with some people, maybe.
Yeah. Or maybe he's hooked up with people and it just meant nothing to him. I mean, I think especially as his like drug dealer image, like, you know, and he's a good looking guy and he's ripped. ripped.
He is, and that's why it's so funny. He looks nothing like part two, Chiron.
So some people had to be throwing themselves at him.
That's what I mean. He's probably made out with probably women.
For sure, yeah. Maybe in denial, or maybe because it's interesting. If Kevin had never called Chiron, what do you think would, like, he kind of changes the whole trajectory of his life, because—
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know if Chiron is still grappling with the fact that he's gay or the fact that he loved Kevin, or like, because he in those 10 years had never tried to reach out to Kevin. But for obvious reasons, Kevin was the one that needed to come to him, considering he beat him up.
True.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, does Chiron, without Kevin calling, does Chiron continue down this path and like remain sort of like asexual or something out of just like memories of Kevin, or I don't know, it's complicated.
Maybe. Sight and sound?
My favorite sight is Mahershala Ali. And I think it's that last scene that you see him in where he just—
That's my favorite sight.
Oh, is it? Yeah, amazing.
He hangs his head and starts crying. Yes. I can't.
And it's just the right amount of crying,
perfect.
Too.
I know. It's perfect.
Yeah. He won the Oscar, right?
Yes.
Yeah, deservedly. He's great in this.
Yeah. He also won the following year for Green Book.
Oh, God. I never saw it.
Ay, ay, ay.
So we have the same sight. Okay.
We have the same sight. That broke me.
I wonder if we have the same sound, too.
We might.
Is it the Barbara Lewis song?
No. I knew you were going to pick that.
Well, that's weird.
The Barbara Lewis song is fantastic. I listen to it all the time.
Here it is.
Chubop, chubop, my baby. Chubop, chubop.
Hello, stranger. It seems so good to see you back again. How long has it been?
It seems like a mighty long time. Chubop, chubop, my baby.
Okay, and mine is kind of like a combined sight and sound. It's when he gets out of Kevin's car and he looks at the beach. And the score comes in, and it's the really gorgeous, because the score is kind of the same. It's the string version.
Oh, the string version.
And it is just, it's gorgeous. I love it. the score is incredible to me. I personally think the score is absolutely incredible.
I do. I think it's a strong point of the movie.
Yes. Here it is.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and Nicholas Britell also did If Beale Street Could Talk, amazing score on that one too.
Yeah.
That movie broke my heart too.
You know, one thing that I really respect about Barry Jenkins is in a time when our art and our media has to be kind of cynical, that he's unafraid to just wear his heart on his sleeve in a way that's very like endearing and very like he doesn't care about being cool. He doesn't care about being edgy. He doesn't care about, it's just like, you get the sense while watching a Barry Jenkins film that like his open bleeding heart is just like on the screen.
That's
and
what I mean.
I really
when
do
I said
appreciate
the emotions
that.
Just like flow out of you.
Yeah.
And I love it. And really romantic too. Beale Street is really romantic. I mean, this is romantic too, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, we would normally do Pauline Kael here, but she had been dead for like 15 years
when
this came out. So we don't have Pauline Kael, but we do have the lovely people at Letterboxd. I have 4.5 stars. Boyhood. Who are you? Moonlight. I'm you, but stronger in every way possible. I really like Boyhood.
I love Boyhood. I love this movie too.
Yeah.
Two can exist at once.
Yeah,
I don't think they're the same.
They're no, they're doing the very thing. Different things. Yeah, very, very,
very
different.
Someone gave a 4.5 stars and said, I'm not sure we as a society deserve a movie as empathetic and open-hearted as Moonlight right now, but I'm grateful it exists.
I had that one saved too.
That's what I went, when I went away from this film, I was like, God, this movie has heart. Like, this movie is just...
Yeah, it really does.
And but it doesn't feel forced. That's why I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is very much like everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of a warm hug.
Yeah.
I can only imagine too for queer people, because it is such an empathetic, like, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. half a star. Nasty.
What?
Some close-minded bigots.
Literally. Someone gave it 4 stars and said, a moderator removed my review of this film because I called it gay, bro. I don't get it.
Well, yeah, I can see it because you're using it in a derogatory term.
But he gave it 4 stars. No, he wasn't. I think that's the point. He wasn't using it in a derogatory way.
But if you follow it with the word bra, it does seem
no,
like...
he said, because I called it, quote, gay,
oh,
end quote,
I see, bra. I see. Well, yeah, that's a little sensitive. Because I love low ratings, half a star. Thought this was going to be a banger about gangs and dealing crack. Instead, the main character is Charmin Ultrasoft, and I'll never get these 2 hours of my life back.
Charmin Ultrasoft.
But the whole point is, in the part 3, he's not Charmin Ultrasoft anymore.
Well, I don't know if that person got there.
But also, doesn't everyone want to be Charmin Ultrasoft inside?
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
If the whole world was, we'd be a better place.
I agree. Someone gave it 0.5 star and said, this movie was so bad, I had to take a hiatus from movies for 5 years.
Oh, sure. Okay.
What? You haven't watched a movie in 5 years?
Because of this movie? My God.
I have 1 more 5 stars, and it's a quote from the movie. It says, shit, I cry so much, sometimes I feel like I'm going to just turn into drops.
Oh, yeah.
And then they said, me talking about this movie? This is a me review. I could have written that.
That's another thing about this movie that I really love is the emotional maturity of its characters. Like, two men admitting, hey, sometimes I cry so much I don't know what to do with myself. That is a really powerful thing.
Even though this whole thing of like masculine expectations and society, like, that's all there. But anytime someone is alone with him, he opens up, they open, like, same thing with Juan. Same thing with Kevin on the beach. Like, when they're alone, they're not afraid to be frank about their emotions, which I love.
Yeah, yeah. Once they know they're in safe company.
Exactly.
I think, too, that for Chiron, it's not his mom that teaches him that. It's Janelle Monáe and Mahershala Ali. Like, they teach him emotional maturity.
And they even tell him, like, you don't have to know right now. Because he's like, how will I know? They're like, you don't have to know right now. You'll just know.
Yeah.
But don't worry about it right now.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is so beautiful. I love Janelle Monáe in this. I love everyone. Naomi Harris, incredible. Mahershala Ali, absolutely phenomenal. Yeah, what a great cast.
Well, this is Moonlight.
Yeah.
I think it's the last of like the new movies from the 2022 list. In fact, after this, we only have three more films from the 2022 top 100 until we're done with that.
Wow.
And we'll move on to the top 250.
That flew by.
But yeah, next week, we are returning to Agnes Varda for the Gleaners and I.
Cool.
So that'll be next week. People love that movie. So come back, join us next week for that. Until then, I'm Greg.
I'm Jackie.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Seen and Heard is an official podcast of the Arroyo Film Club. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to drop us a line, you can find us on email at hello@seenandheardpod.com or on Instagram @seenandheardpod.